Hey, I'm so excited about kicking off this season of Be Rich. And if this is your first time with us in this season, this is reason enough to make our church your church home. You can find better preaching. You will not find more generous people and more people concerned about their community. Now, generally speaking, it is generally easier to know what to do than what to believe. And this isn't true in every realm of life, but in most realms of life, it's always easier to figure out what to do than what to believe. It's easier to figure out the right thing to do oftentimes than the right thing to believe. I grew up in a version of Christianity that was all about believing correctly. It almost didn't matter what you did because you could always get forgiven, but you better believe correctly. A lot hinged on just believing correctly. And you know this, if you went to school or you studied any kind of church history, or if you even know sort of at the macro level what happened in ancient history, not even ancient history, but even after that, that the church, once the church got started, the church actually went to war with itself over what to believe. I mean, the church argued over words. The church argued over peripheral things. And during the Reformation, tens of thousands of people died as Christian groups went to war with each other, and people were arrested and strangled, and all kinds of terrible things happened over the issue or the question of what is the right way, or specifically, what is the right thing to believe. And belief is extremely important. But here's the kicker, and here's the surprise, and here's the thing that if you're not a church person or you haven't been to church in a long time, here's the thing that I would love for you to hear today. When you read the New Testament authors, when you read the authors of the New Testament, you discover that the core beliefs of Christianity are really quite simple. They're quite simple, they're memorable, and most importantly, they are actionable. There will always be some mystery around the periphery. There will always be interesting things to discuss and theological peculiarities that are kind of fun to dissect and decide we believe this and you believe that. But there is extraordinary clarity at the core. Outside of, or in the region of Caesarea Philippi, Jesus is with his guys. We talk about this all the time. And he says to them, who do people say that I am? And Peter says, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus says, you're exactly right. I'm the Christ, the Son of the living God. And then he says this, Peter and all of you guys here, he said, I'm going to build a brand new movement around this one simple idea. My identity, who I claim to be, that he would later punctuate with his resurrection, that I am the Christ, the Son of the living God. And that is the core belief. In fact, Christians in every language, in every single world, if you were to gather Christians together, perhaps the only thing we have in common in terms of belief is that we believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. And then toward the end of his ministry, he said, now that I've firmly established with you who I am, here's what I want you to do. And he said, I'm going to give you a new commandment, not a list, just one. You are to love one another. That wasn't new, but he wasn't through. You are to love one another. I'm going to define it for you, he said. You are to love one another the way that I have loved you. And this was so core. This was so central. He said this. He said, by this kind of unique love, everyone will know that you are my disciple or my follower or my learner if you love one another. This is how we are to be characterized. This is how us Jesus followers are to be recognized. And the rest is just kind of detail. Because imagine a world, and I know I say this all the time, I'm going to keep saying it. Imagine a world where people skeptical of what we believe are envious of how well we treat each other and amazed at how well we treat them. Long before there were chapters and verses, long before there was the Bible, there was a version of our faith. There was a version of Christianity that captured the attention of the world because of how it behaved, not simply what it believed. A version of faith that did things. A version of faith that made people want it to be true before they were able to believe that it could actually be true. And John, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John the apostle of Jesus, John that watched Jesus from the day he stepped onto the pages of history at the Jordan River when the other John the Baptist, baptized him. John, who had a front row seat as an old man, all of his friends are dead. Perhaps the city of Jerusalem has been sacked and the temple burnt by this time. Peter is dead. The apostle Paul is dead. We don't know what happened to the other apostles by this time in history. He might have been the last man standing. John, who is the first person to put into print that we know of, that God is love, a uniquely Christian idea. That same John writes to first century Christians. And here's what he says. And this may bother you a little bit, depending on what kind of church you were raised in or what kind of version of Christianity you were raised in. But if you're not a Christian or you used to be or you're no longer a Jesus follower, I hope you find this so intriguing you lean in and perhaps you'll be open to giving the message of Jesus a second chance. Here's what John, who knew Jesus, was. And for just a minute, if we could suspend our imagination, just suspend what we've known. I'm not reading from the Bible for just a moment. I'm reading from a letter written in the first century by an eyewitness to the events of Jesus, to men and women who were not eyewitnesses, but to who had become followers of Jesus. And here's what John, the friend of Jesus, wrote to all of us. "For this is the message you first century Christians heard from the beginning." In other words, the moment that you began to entertain the fact that maybe Jesus was the Son of God, he said at the very beginning of your faith journey, here's what you were told. We should love one another. He said, this is basic. This is 101. This is the very first thing you heard when you began your walk with Jesus. And then after illustrating it with a story from the Old Testament of Cain and Abel, he continues in verse 14 and he says this. He says, "We know, we have certainty, we're confident that we have passed from death to life because..." In other words, we have confidence that this is the real deal. We have confidence that something has happened on the inside of us. We have confidence that the Spirit of God lives on the inside of us. Why? Because the Bible tells us so. There wasn't a Bible yet. He didn't have one. He was writing one. He just didn't even know it, right? Because we believe the correct things, not according to John, who knew Jesus. Listen to what he says. "We know that we have passed from death to life because we love each other. Anyone," look at this, "anyone who does not love remains in death. Anyone who hates a brother or a sister is a murderer. And you know that no murderer has eternal life residing in them." And then he says this, and this is how we know what love is, because it's not just general love. He said, this is how we know this very unique brand of love is. This is how we know what love is. And then John says something that we miss because, again, the way we were brought up reading our Bibles, he says, look, this is how we know what love is. Something happened. Something happened. This is how we know what love looks like. We saw it. Something happened. And John would say, "I was there and I saw it." This is how we know what this unique brand of love looks like. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. And then here is what stands at the epicenter of the Christian faith. Here's what stands at the epicenter of all we say we believe and all we say we are, have embraced and all we say that we follow when it comes to following Jesus. He says, this is how we know what love is, that Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. And in light of that, here's what we ought to not believe. Here's what we ought to do. And he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and our sisters. This is the central message of Christianity. In light of what God through Christ has done for us, we are to do for others. In light of what God through Christ has done for us, this is what we are to do for others. But when you read this, perhaps you think what his first century readers thought, but wait a minute, who are my brothers and who are my sisters? And certainly as you read the rest of John's letters, you understand that these are other believers, other followers of Jesus. But it's more than that. And Jesus made sure that John and his first century followers would know that it was more than that. Because when he told the story, when he told the parable of the Good Samaritan, he teased this out. Because you remember a lawyer came to Jesus and said, I'm supposed to love my neighbor, but you know, my neighbor are just other Jewish people, right? I mean, who is my neighbor? And in that moment, Jesus changed the world with an incredible story and an incredible punchline at the end of the story. He says, your neighbor is anyone who has a need you can meet. Your neighbor is anyone who has a need you can meet. Your neighbor is anyone, whether they're Jewish or not, or Gentile or not, or live in your neighborhood or not. A neighbor is anyone who has a need you can meet. Your brothers and sisters are those who have needs you can meet. And then Jesus would illustrate it at Calvary. For God so loved the world that he gave his son's life. So John, okay, we get all that. So short of dying for my brothers and sisters and short of dying for my neighbors and short of physically, literally laying down my life for my brothers and sisters or my neighbors or people who have needs, what exactly does this look like? To which John would say, I'm so glad you asked, but you may be sorry that you ask. If anyone, he doesn't define it narrowly, if anyone has material possessions, that would be us. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need, and what he says next is so graphic that our modern English translations have kind of cleaned it up and kind of dumbed it down for us. In fact, the New International Version that I use all the time, here's how it reads in our English Bible. It says, if anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need, but has no pity on them. But that's not what the Greek text reads. Here's what the Greek text reads. The Greek text says this, klese ta spagna autu ap autu. Translated literally, shuts up the bowels of him from him. This little word klese, actually the verb kleno, you know what it means? It means to prevent, I know this is graphic, but this is John's point, so let's graphic. It means to prevent passage at an opening. To prevent passage at an opening. I want you to get the picture. To prevent passage at an opening. That's what this word means. So the King James translators back in 1611, they weren't polite. They just kind of went for it. So here's the King James translation of the Greek. This is what it looks like. But whoso hath his world's good and seeth his brother have need and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him. Because that's what the Greek text reads. In other words, let me translate. Here's what John's saying to you, and here's what John's saying to me, and here's what John's saying to his first century readers. If you see someone in need, and you suddenly get financially constipated, you may be full of something. But it ain't the love of God, baby. If anyone, you should read your Bibles. It's right there. If anyone has material possession and sees a brother or sister in need, but has no pity on them, here's the question I have to ask myself. Here's the question I hope we all ask ourselves. Here's the question that perhaps if we'd been answering this question correctly for generation after generation after generation, there wouldn't be so much resistance to the message of Jesus. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need, but has no pity on them, closes up on the inside, their heart shuts down, their compassion shuts down, how can the love of God be in that person? Now, here's why John uses such graphic language. Again, John, who wrote this, saw Jesus crucified. He saw literally the price that Jesus, and he put all this together afterwards with the apostles, he saw literally what Jesus paid, the price that Jesus paid for John's sin, for my sin, for your sin. This was not a story he heard. This was a piece of history he witnessed. So imagine that. Imagine you see your best friend, your rabbi crucified. You'd hoped he was the Son of God. And then a few days later, you have breakfast with a crucified rabbi and friend on the beach, and you conclude he is who he claimed to be. He is, in fact, the Son of God. That he was right when he said that not even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but the Son of Man, the Son of God, came to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. And those gentlemen and those women who witnessed both his crucifixion and his resurrection, they understood. Who are we? How dare we ever shut our hearts, our minds, our compassion down in light of need, in light of all that God has done for us? He saw the price that Jesus paid for his sin. This was not a story, again, that he heard. John could not imagine a financially constipated Jesus follower. This was a contradiction in terms. In light of what God had done for him, in light of what God has done for me, in light of what God has done for all of us, how could we? How, if seeing a need we can meet, this is what John would say to me and to you. He would say, if seeing a need you can meet causes you to freeze up and to lock up and to close up, I think John would say to me and say to us, well, then you don't get it. You don't understand. It's become a fairy tale for you. It's become a storybook story for you. It's become something that's happened so far in distant past that it doesn't really connect with your life. But if you'd stood with me and with his mother and seen this, and then if it dawned on you the significance of what you'd seen and what God has done, that Jesus gave his life for that person in need. Jesus gave his life for the person in need, that has a need that I can meet or something that I can consider or something that I can respond to, and for me to close up on the inside. If Jesus gave his life for that person, certainly I can spare a few dollars, a few minutes, some of my extra. Surely if we understood this, surely if we had seen what John had seen, surely we would be happy to do for others what others can't in that moment do for themselves, because that's the gospel. While I was still a sinner, Christ died for me. When I was helpless and dead in my trespasses and sin, God, through his son, did something for me. And he says, now I want you to live a life that reflects that kind of generosity to the people around you. John would agree. We may not always know what to believe outside the core of our beliefs, but isn't it true? In light of what Christ did for us, we almost always know what to do. We almost always know what love requires of us. Now, to be clear, I've said this before. This is not about the golden rule. The golden rule is, you know, I'll do for you what I want you to do for me. This isn't do for others what you want done for you. This is do for others in light of what's been done for you. Back to John's letter, he says this, Dear children, let us not love with words or speech. In other words, he's saying, look, don't just sing about it and don't just preach about it, but with actions, this is amazing, but with action and in truth. And then he says, this isn't an add-on. This isn't extra credit. This isn't like the bonus application of Christianity. Listen to this. This is how we know. This is the part that may be new. This is the part that may be disruptive to your theology. This is how we know that we belong to the truth. This is how you know that you're in. This is how you know you're a child of God. This is how we know that we can set our hearts. We can set our hearts at rest in his presence. This is how we have assurance. Again, this may be new, but John says that the assurance of your salvation, the assurance of where you stand with your heavenly Father, is not a prayer that you prayed. And if you grew up in church like me, it's not a prayer that you prayed and then re-prayed and re-prayed and re-prayed and re-prayed. And every time there was a camp and every time there was a revival and every time somebody led that in prayer, I just kept praying that prayer just to make sure I was in, right? Just want to make sure, don't want to double check. John says, I don't know where you came up with that. That's not the assurance of where you stand with God. It's not a prayer that you prayed as a child. It's the life that you live. And it is the love that you do. Because as a Christian, as a modern Christian, even with all the tools and all the translations and all the commentaries and all the seminary trained people and all the scholarship and all the academics that's gone into bringing us these incredible tools and these incredible translations, as a Christian, we may not always know exactly what to believe, but we almost always know what love requires of us. And that's why we do Be Rich. Now, if you're new, here's the deal. Once a year, all of our churches from the Atlanta area and all of our churches from around the country come together and we do something corporately that we're doing all year long individually. We give and we serve and we love in Jesus' name. We give and we serve and we love out loud, because here's what we believe based on what Jesus taught. Everybody matters to God, whether God matters to them or not. For God so loved the world, the whole world, he gave his only son, knowing that very few people would know about it and very few people would respond to it. So we believe that everybody matters to God, whether God matters to them or not. And we call this Be Rich, not because we think it's cute. This is something the Apostle Paul actually wrote to his protege, Timothy. He was a young man coming up that Paul would hoped it would one day take his place. And here's what Paul wrote to Timothy. He said, command those who are rich in this present world, and that's most of us, and we don't think we're rich because, you know, we know people who are richer, but, you know, our cars have their own little houses, so it's amazing, right? Okay. command those who are rich in this present world to do good, and here's our phrase, and to be rich. He says, I want you to be rich. I want you to act the way you are. I want you to live out, and I want you to manifest what God has blessed you with, your extra, and you're running over, and the fact that you live where you live, and you have what you have, and yes, there are always people who have more, but don't be blinded by that. He says, tell those people who are rich in this present world to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous, and to be willing to share. And here's the thing. I don't know you individually, but I would guess almost all of us, in fact, probably all of us want to make a difference with our stuff. None of us want to be selfish. None of us want to be characterized as selfish. We all want to make a difference, but sometimes we just don't know how. And be rich, as we said earlier on, be rich makes it simple. This is our 13th year of Be Rich. It's amazing to me, our 13th year of Be Rich. For the past 12 years, check this out. For the past 12 years, you have served 397,000 hours in our local communities. And you have given a little over $42 million away to these fabulous nonprofits in all of our communities. This year, 74 churches. Yeah, you should give yourself a hand for that. That's amazing. This year, 74 churches are participating around the country in 18 states, 6 countries. That means that covers about 120,000 people when you add up all the people in those churches and over 300 nonprofits. And the way this works, if you're new, is we don't go out into our communities and start a lot of things. We find the rock star charities. We find the people that are knocking it out of the park, faith-based and non-faith-based charities. We find the charities that are making a difference, and then we go to them and ask how we can support. So in the Atlanta area, we have 25 Intersect Partners, that's what we call them, Intersect Partners, that we work with all year long. And these Intersect Partners focus on food insecurity. This is a very important phrase. People who don't know where the next meal is coming from. If they have the current meal, but they don't know where the next meal is coming from. It's a powerful, powerful insecurity. It addresses food insecurity, foster care, medical care, housing, education, and several other big opportunities or big issues that we find in our communities. In addition, we have 13 international partners that we work with throughout the year through Global X. And many of you have gone on Global X trips, and you've seen how this money is spent, and you've seen how this money is distributed, and some of you have been a part of making a difference internationally through Be Rich. So here's how it works, if you're new. It breaks down into three parts, three components. There's give, there's serve, and there's love, and today we're talking about give. This weekend, we're talking about give. So for the past several months, our staff, our Intersect staff, has gone to all of our Intersect partners, and they've asked two really big questions. What would make a big difference for you as an organization, and what would help you make a big difference? What would make a big difference for you? In other words, what would be like a game changer? Oh my goodness, it's something we don't have to worry about. It's something we wanted to purchase, but we weren't sure when we were going to get it. We wanted to hire a staff member, but it wasn't in the budget. What would make a big difference for you, and what would allow you to make an even bigger difference in your sphere of influence? And then we went out, as we did every year, and we vetted about a little over $2 million worth of projects from our Be Rich partners. And then, because you're generally so generous, we went out and vetted another $3+ million, because every year you go crazy with Be Rich. And we never promise anybody any money, because we don't know how much is going to come in. We just find out what would make a big difference for them and what would empower them to make a big difference. And with Be Rich, there is no dollar goal. We do not have a dollar amount in mind in terms of how much we want to raise. Our goal is 100% participation. We want every single person in the rooms today and every single person watching or listening to participate. So we're going to ask 100% of you to give, and then we are giving 100% of it away. No carrying costs, no shipping and handling. 100% comes in, it all comes in, it all goes out. And that's why on Be Rich Give Day, I do not mind pressing you hard, whether you're a Christian, non-Christian, hate Christians, I don't care. This isn't about us. This is about the community. And I know that you want to be generous, and I know that you want to make a difference, and these fabulous organizations not only look forward to what you do for them, in some cases they've learned to depend on it because you have been so extraordinarily generous. Now, here's the great news, and I've been able to announce this for 12 years in a row. The great news is there has been no price increase or adjustment even for inflation, okay? We're asking everybody to participate with a one-time gift of, let's say it together, $39.95. And if everybody in our Atlanta area churches, and if all of you who are sitting at home watching, and all of you who are driving but wait till you park, if everybody participates, that will generate about $2.1 million today, which will allow us to service a little over 50 projects. These projects include things like this. We're going to fund some local foster care initiatives. We're going to fund a border station in a country that I cannot name that rescues primarily girls that are being taken across the border illegally. In fact, at these particular stations, they rescue about 100 girls per station per year, and they have them all along the border. We're going to fund operating costs for some of our local nonprofits. People do not like to give to operating costs, to charities. They like to give money that's going directly to help the people. But as a nonprofit, and you're business people, you get this, it takes money to operate a nonprofit. And so we're going to help fund some of their basic costs so that they can say to their contributors, hey, your money is going straight to the people that we serve. We're going to fund programs for at-risk kids in local schools. We're going to fund counseling and mental health care initiatives for suicide prevention in schools, in public schools, and for young women coming out of trafficking. We're going to fund job training initiatives and professional development. It's a big deal to get people out of poverty and to keep them out of poverty. We're going to fund some emergency assistance to prevent homelessness. We're going to fund some staff positions, which we love to do because every nonprofit, if we could just get one more person to do this or that, we're like, you know what? Hire them. We'll cover it for a year. Then talk to us next year. We fund sustainability projects. And then we're funding, and this is a new thing, especially in the city of Atlanta, some organizations are just beginning to address this, and we want to be on the front end of this, to fund mentoring for unaccompanied homeless teens. There are more and more teenagers that are showing up at public high schools, and they can't go back home. They have no home to go to. They end up staying with friends. They end up staying with neighbors. And they are trying desperately to stay out of the foster care system. And the foster care system is wonderful. It's just overloaded. And for teenagers, it is so difficult to drop into foster care. So there are several organizations that are addressing this gap. And we want to be on the front end of helping those organizations help these teenagers find a home, stay out of foster care, finish high school, and then go on and do something productive in society. So these are game changers for our partners, and they are life changers for the people they serve. Now, according to John, who knew Jesus, my devotion and your devotion to God, according to John, who knew Jesus, my devotion and your devotion to God is demonstrated, is best demonstrated and authenticated by our love for others. But come on, you know this, extravagant generosity. And that's what this is. That's what Be Rich is all about. Extravagant generosity toward others is the appropriate response to our Heavenly Father, who is extravagantly generous to all of us. Now, there are several ways to participate today as we think about giving. For those of you who have your local church app, you can right now go to the app. If you've already put in your information, click the Be Rich tab, and you can give from your seats. If you're driving, pull over. If you're at home, you can do it right now. This is why we want you to have your local church app so you can respond immediately. We will take cash, check, debit, or credit cards, and we're going to have little swiper things out there on some iPads as you leave. The way to find those is this. The green balloons are cash and check. If you have a credit or debit card, you go to the red balloon. Again, if everybody does $39.95, we'll raise $2 million today and fund these projects. I hope you will be more generous than that because many of us have the capacity to be more generous than that. So let me ask you the question that I ask at the top of our time together. Are you ready? Okay, so let's give. The next week, we're going to talk about let's serve. And the week after that, we're going to talk about let's love. Let's show our communities, and now more than ever, let's show our communities, Republican, Democrat, don't know, don't care, we have the ability to come together to do something extraordinary for our communities and extraordinary for our nation. And while people are going to debate themselves into a hole trying to decide who's going to be the next president of the United States, we will all participate in November when the time comes around. But in the meantime, we're going to make a difference right now together because we're Jesus followers. It's what we've been called to do. And we have, as a group of churches in our city, an extraordinary opportunity and I think responsibility to do something great. So let's show our communities that we're not just about sermons and songs. On your mark, Get set, be rich, and we'll see you next week.